Nonetheless, there were strange machines in the city, built to do peculiar and sometimes dangerous things. Many of them might still run, but the elderly twins reckoned that none now in the city knew how to start them up, for they hadn't been heard in years. Maybe that could change, though, Eddie thought, his eyes gleaming. If, that is, an enterprising, travel-minded young man with a little knowledge of strange machinery and endless lights came along, it could be just a matter of finding the on switches. I mean, it really could be that simple. Or maybe they just blew a bunch of fuses. Think of that, friends and neighbors. Just replace half a dozen 400-amp buses and light the whole place up like a Reno Saturday night. Susanna elbowed him and asked in a low voice what was so funny. Eddie shook his head and put a finger to his lips, earning an irritated look from the love of his life. The albinos, meanwhile, were continuing their story, handing its thread back and forth with the unconscious ease which probably nothing but lifetime twinship can provide. 4 or 5 generations ago, they said, the city had still been quite heavily populated and reasonably civilized, although the residents drove wagons and buckboards along the wide boulevards the great old ones had constructed for their fabulous horseless vehicles. The city dwellers were artisans and what the twins called manufactories, and trade both on the river and over it had been brisk. Over it? Roland asked. The bridge over the Seine still stands, Aunt Talitha said, or did 20 years ago. Aye, old Bill Muffin and his boy saw it not 10 years agone, Si agreed, making his first contribution to the conversation. What sort of bridge? The gunslinger asked. A great thing of steel cables, one of the twins said. It stands in the sky like the web of some great spider, he added shyly. I should like to see it again before I die. Probably fallen in by now, Aunt Talitha said dismissively, and good riddance, devil's work. She turned to the twins. Tell them what's happened since and why the city's so dangerous now, apart from any haunts that may den there, that is, and I'll warrant there's a power of 'em. These folks want to get on, and the sun's on the wester. 10. The rest of the story was but another version of a tale Roland of Gilead had heard many times, and had in some measure lived through himself. It was fragmentary and incomplete, undoubtedly shot through with myth and misinformation, its linear progress distorted by the odd changes, both temporal and directional, which were now taking place in the world, and it could be summed up in a single compound sentence. Once there was a world we knew, but that world has moved on. These old people of River Crossing knew of Gilead no more than Roland knew of the River Barony. And the name of John Farson, the man who had brought ruin and anarchy on Roland's land, meant nothing to them. But all stories of the old world's passing were similar. Too similar, Roland thought, to be coincidence. A great civil war, perhaps in Garland, perhaps in a more distant land called Porla, had erupted 300, perhaps even 400 years ago. Its ripples had spread slowly outward, pushing anarchy and dissension ahead of them. Few, if any, kingdoms had been able to stand against those slow waves, and anarchy had come to this part of the world as surely as night follows sunset. At one time, whole armies had been on the roads, sometimes in advance, sometimes in retreat, always confused and without long-term goals. As time passed, they crumbled into smaller groups, and these degenerated into roving bands of harriers. Trade faltered, then broke down entirely. Travel went from a matter of inconvenience to one of danger. In the end, it became almost impossible. Communication with the city thinned steadily and had all but ceased 120 years ago.